morning, Charlie, and welcome to Coffee Break with Neil Damgard and Charlie Evans and Godzilla and King Kong and the Mandalorian and anybody else that we can get crammed into the room here with us.
It's a big week for giant monster movies.
Yes.
Good morning, Neil.
Good morning, Charlie. I'm glad to have you today. I really am, and we're going to talk about some stuff today.
Yes, sir. Yes, sir.
And, you know, in church yesterday, you used a word, man. I mean, you popped this word out to introduce the entire worship experience outside in the sunshine and putting us all right on the same wavelength here. You used the word, and this is what we're going to talk about today, folks. Charlie and I are going to talk about words that we use that are not used much, I don't think. And he used the word, Charlie, you used the word lovely. Mm-hmm. Why'd you use that word?
Was I talking about it's lovely to be here today, that kind of thing? Was it a, it's a lovely gathering, lovely to see you all?
No, that's not what you said.
What did I say?
The weather was lovely.
Oh, the weather's
lovely. It's a lovely morning.
Yeah. Yeah.
And it was, but I wanted to look it around and what did he say?
Yeah. You know? Yeah.
I mean, why don't we use that word? It's a great word.
Lovely.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. I don't know why that obviously, because I don't remember it that well, that was not a deliberate choice of words that I made.
It just popped out.
It's a vocational hazard for me.
All right.
That I read archaic literature.
Oh my goodness!
Right.
What do the Puritans use that word?
So I sometimes weird stuff shows up in my vocabulary that makes my wife rolls her eyes.
I hope you use the word lovely.
Yeah, I well
towards her on occasion.
I do sometimes refer to her as the lovely one.
The lovely one. Yes.
Mm-hmm. And my boys know who I'm talking about when I say.
You're not talking about them.
The lovely ones requested that you do the dishes properly this time.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah, that's appropriate, you know. So we would use the word lovely in reference to our wives, perhaps, mm-hmm. and the weather. Maybe, and yet, how did the Puritans use it? Who were they talking about?
Well, the not a lot of Puritans are talking about their wives or the weather. They're mostly talking about Jesus.
And lovely so comes to mind.
And they're going to refer to, so, you know, that they did have a way, we think of them as very austere and unfeeling, but they would speak about Jesus with, you know, kind of saccharine language sometimes, like about his sweetness. They talk about how precious he is. You know, like a grandmother's going to talk about a newborn baby as being precious, but they're going to talk about, you know, the resurrected Christ as being our precious Lord, which we don't use those words that way.
No, we always use the word precious in reference to the ring.
The one ring. My precious, yes. Exactly.
I'm sorry. I didn't mean to go there, but
the precious.
Know, yeah.
The precious.
You know, but precious is another good word. Yeah. You know, I'd be embarrassed to use that word precious. Yeah. I think most of the time. Oh, well, I don't know. Maybe I'm not embarrassed by much anymore. But anyway, I don't know. But lovely is really a great word, and I mean I can't imagine two guys walking down the street talking to each other, you know, about something that they're both that they both like, and using the word lovely.
Yeah, a jacket that's a lovely jacket you got on today. You
know? Well, maybe sarcastically we would. Oh, that's lovely. Yeah, sure. Yeah.
No, that's true. That's true. And a mocking.
Yeah. How about the word? How about this word? I mean, I got 10 words here. I don't know if we'll get through them all or not, Charlie. But
yeah, go ahead.
They're random. I popped these words out of my head, and this next word I picked just because it's a cool word, and I don't think anybody at all uses this word except us.
Mm-hmm.
Transubstantiation.
Yes.
Transubstantiation. That's a 6-syllable word right there, man. That's an industrial strength word.
That's big time, yeah.
Well, transubstantiation, nobody uses that word, but it's such a cool word to say. What does it mean?
Yeah.
Do you ever use that word?
Well, I mean, only when I'm arguing about transubstantiation. That's a very specific word, right? That's going to only be used in conversations about something very specific. That's a tool you only pull out in certain circumstances.
Yeah, you want to say, let me just let you know here, I know what I'm talking about.
Yeah.
Transubstantiation.
Yeah. Tetragrammaton.
Tetragrammaton. Yeah, protoangelic. And there's consubstantiation. And there for our listening audience who wonder what we smoked this morning before we came together, transubstantiation is a reference to...
To the Roman Catholic doctrine related to the Lord's Supper, to communion, that the bread and wine actually becomes the body and blood of Christ.
And they sort of shrug and go, you don't like miracles? You don't believe in miracles?
Yeah, here we go.
What's your problem with miracles? I thought you believed in miracles.
We do miracles every day.
This is a miracle.
Yep.
They would say.
Boom.
Luther comes along and sort of steals the word transubstantiation.
Yeah, he's going to fudge it a little bit.
Yeah. Well, you know, substantiation's cool, but we're going to call it consubstantiation.
Yeah.
And that's a little, you know, he sort of backs off of the Catholic idea pretty far.
Correct.
But then there's, yeah, so anyway, I've said all I want to say about that.
I mean, we're just talking about words and the way that transubstantiation rolls off the tongue, I like.
Yeah, I mean, it almost sounds like a Star Trek word or something, you know, or
it does.
Star Wars word, transubstantiation. Mm-hmm. Yeah. I mean, the warp engines are in a bad state of, I don't know, anyway.
Mm-hmm. I think that we should start, you know, if you believe in transubstantiation, you should refer to yourself as trans. I think that should be.
Let me know how that works. because I don't think that's going to sell a lot right there. How about this word? Here's a short word that I don't hear much. Hell. H-E-L-L.
Yeah,
hell.
Boy. So I used the word hell in the sermon yesterday. I don't know if you
did
noticed.
Did you use it?
I mentioned it one time.
I was there. Was I not paying attention?
And I felt it. You know, when I'm about a paragraph away in my notes, I felt it coming.
Wow.
And then when I said it, you know, it's not a word that we say much, and it's a word that elicits such a strong reaction from a variety of people. It has an alienating effect.
Yeah, I mean, when I was a kid, we would use it in a diminutive sense. We would just dismissive sense. We would say, "Go to hell."
Yeah,
you know, and that was a dismissive kind of get away from me, get out of here. You're crazy. You're stupid. You're beneath me.
Mm-hmm.
But we really didn't mean what the phrase implies.
Yeah, yeah.
So your life will now end short of what it would have ended. Just go to hell.
Yeah.
We didn't mean that.
You're making light.
Yes.
Yeah, yeah.
but hell is a real thing.
Right.
And it's a scary thing.
Yeah. So I am of the mind that if you do believe in the reality of hell, it's something that should never be spoken about lightly.
Yes.
And honestly, I don't know that I can muster the appropriate gravity to talk about it in a way that it deserves to be talked about.
Do you think hell is the lake of fire, or do you think hell is the intermediate state of separation of the departed soul who does not know Christ?
Ooh, I don't.
I don't what? I don't know, or I don't?
I don't know. I think that, you know, in the scriptures, I mean, a variety of words are being used, and it seems like a variety of things
that
are being referred to. I mean, ultimately, you're talking about, you know, the miserable state of those eternally separated from the living God and all the goodness and light therein. Right, cast out of his presence.
Right, and the story that Jesus tells of Lazarus and the rich man is an endlessly fascinating story to me because hell's in that story.
Yeah,
I think.
Yeah, and He's in. But it's weird. It's a parabolic. I mean, he sees heaven. You know, over the chasm. It's a very weird. I don't know what we glean about what's actually going to transpire from the specifics.
But I completely agree with you. This is not a light subject, and it shouldn't be spoken of lightly, and it certainly shouldn't be spoken of in a human to human dismissive kind of way, or cursing kind of way. That's just dumb. Right.
But I think that we're seeing a resurgence of hell in common speech and as a topic. Are you familiar with the Little Nas X controversy?
No.
You so you remember last year that big song, Old Time Road, that song that like every elementary school student was singing last year?
Yeah, yeah.
So that guy who had the biggest song in the world, he came out with a song this year that involves him going to hell and, kind of dancing provocatively with the devil. I won't get into specifics here. And to accompany this song and this music video that he did, they've been selling a special, Nike tennis shoe that has satanic imagery on it. That they're using the word hell, they're using the word Satan, and it's part of pop culture in a way.
Isn't that something?
Yeah, that I don't know what to do with,
Yeah. Well, it's been lightened up and ha-ha'd, to the point where it's in our fantasies. The whole concept of the Sith in Star Wars, mm-hmm. the Sith line is plainly demonic, we would say. Spiritually speaking.
Like a Darth Maul, that guy.
Yeah. And the Sith Lord at the end of whatever film it is, the guy with the big crease down his face. And,
yeah.
There's an evilness, but the culture seems to be lightening up on how evil is.
Yeah.
And so hell is making its way back into the vernacular, I guess, and not with a 17th century feel to it.
No, not. But it's not. You think about the way that horror movies have been so popular in recent. They've always been popular, but there've been so many in recent years. It is coming in to the culture in a way that it's different than like the jokey Looney Tunes, Devil in the Pajamas kind of way. Like it's serious in a way, but it's not the kind of seriousness that we would say needs to like as a reality,
And so the bottom line with this word is that we would say, Christians would say, that hell is a reality. The concept of judgment is a reality. It's to be feared. It's to be respected. It's to be spoken of with great care mm-hmm. and deliberate way of talking about it. It's just an important word, and yet it's not used much and maybe it's coming back. I want to move on to another word to lighten the discussion up,
Charlie. Yeah, please, go on.
getting out of hell.
Yeah.
The word gay is funny to me. There's an example of a word which is used a lot today, but it's been totally stolen. When I think about the Christmas Carol, yeah. Dawn, we now are gay apparel.
Yeah.
It's been
redefined.
Redefined. Yeah.
Yeah.
And that's interesting because when I was growing up, it wasn't just the Christmas Carol that used the word. People would say, man, I'm feeling so gay today.
Yeah.
And who authorized the change of the meaning of that word?
Oh, there was no need to authorize it. That was a grassroots movement.
Well, that's interesting that mm-hmm. just as an example of a movement can grab a word and decide. I don't think there was a headquarters on this someplace.
It just
spilled out through the culture.
Yeah.
And pretty within 20 years or so, nobody's using it in its original 400-year-old sense. Oxford English Dictionary or something.
Oh, yeah.
It's used in a completely different way now, and nobody had any say in this.
So I was growing up in the 80s, and aside from the Christmas Carol where we make reference to donning, we now are gay apparel, I would never have, I had no concept of the former usage.
It's always in your life meant.
Yeah, it's always been a reference to the LGBT community and, yeah. and homosexuality, and that was so there wasn't a sense of repurposing,
yeah, or losing a former word, and it's always like been that in your life, yes,
yeah, yeah.
Well, that's just an interesting example of how words can meaning can be changed.
Now, I'll be honest with you, Neil. I don't know. Does the term gay in current usage refer, I mean, does it have a broader, is it like the word queer that it means more than just a particular sexual preference or, sexuality? It has reference to.
I mean, and where do you go to find out the answer to this question?
Which
news source do you inquire?
Twitter?
You don't know.
Yeah.
Wikipedia is the same as scripture almost, you know, right? No,
yeah.
I'm kidding. You know, but I don't know where you would query to. Sorry, I don't know where you would interrogate to discern the breadth of the use of a word. I only ever hear it referenced in two scenarios. One, someone's telling me that they're gay, mm-hmm. or two, politically. You know, there's that whole place where the word is used with great vehemence, you know.
Oh yeah.
So it's just an interesting word. We're talking about words today on the podcast, and this is just fun. We're not going to actually accomplish anything today. I hope you realize that.
I was prepared for that.
but this is a thing that we think about. That I think about. I think words are important.
Yeah.
And this is a whole different podcast, but I just want to reference it because I think it is important for Christians. We attach power to words, or we recognize, and it's so important to us that we actually call the Bible the Word of God. We mm-hmm. say God communicated to humans through various human authors, usually about 98% of the Bible is God to a human, to another human. There's a few exceptions, dramatic exceptions. But generally, God is communicating through a human being using words. Mm-hmm. And we would say those words strung together in certain Bible verses are powerful.
Yeah.
And we would go so far as to say your fate it hinges on whether you believe this string of words.
Yeah. I think there's something happening in our culturally that you're referring to, that there's a misunderstanding taking place on some level, because there are people, I mean, oftentimes it is, you know, conservative, Bible-believing Christian people. Sometimes it's the broader sort of evangelical morass, whatever that is right now, I don't know. But there are people who believe what you just said are alarmed and unsettled by the changing of meaning in words for the reason that you just articulated, that words are important to me. They define part of my identity and my perception of reality. And when that starts to become shifting sand, when we start to follow after Derrida and take these things apart and reinterpret them, it's deeply unsettling to me. That gets understood, I think, by a lot of people in the world as you just love tradition. You just love the way things were. You love, and especially when you get, race and class involved, you love being in control and you're afraid of any change. And so you have people arguing two different things and in a conflict. You know, somebody's defending or speaking like derisively about like the change in the meaning of the word gay. And they have a reason for, it may be a very sincere, it freaks me out when words change meaning because words mean so much to me. Whereas it's perceived in the culture as you're just a controlling, domineering, tradition-loving, jerk. You know what I mean?
Yes, I do know what you mean. And So there's all these sort of interesting levels that emerge from how we use words. I don't want to get into this controversy today specifically, but I've become increasingly nervous about being depicted as being white.
Yeah.
Because I want to ask somebody, and I'm not sure what office I go to make an appointment to ask this question, a university, the government, I don't know where, what is white? Is white, what is that? I mean, you know, I when I look at my skin, it's not like the piece of paper in the photocopier.
Yeah.
You know, what? People would dismiss this as saying, well, that's just stupid. Everybody knows what white is. No, they don't. What is white?
Well, the meaning is changing.
Yes.
Right.
And it's changing. But that's not on my list. Another word on my list today is the word bishop.
Yeah.
What do you think of that word? That's nobody uses that word, do they?
Bishop?
Except in the,
Church. I mean, not in a general church way. Yeah. I mean, I grew up in the Roman Catholic Church and bishops, what's the bishop think? What's the bishop going to do? The bishop is here. I mean, that was a big deal, but otherwise it doesn't come up. It's a very specialized word.
It's in chess.
Or chess. You know, chess. That's true. That's true, Neil. I,
By the way.
Yeah.
I just thought of that.
Yeah. But other than that, those two very specific realms.
the list of words I've generated here don't have any connection to each other much at all, mm-hmm. except that they're words that are valid words that we don't use that word. In black evangelical churches, denominations, they have bishops.
Yeah.
And they're very proud of using that word to describe, sometimes it's just the pastor.
Yeah. You know? It becomes an interchangeable title.
And it's actually it's a biblical word in the King James. Translation. The word is used there, and the concept of a higher authority. The leader of the community possesses authority. He possesses a bishop kind of authority, mm-hmm. which is higher up in some ways than just a leader, a pastor, an elder even. So the word exists in certain parts of our culture, certain subgroups of our culture. Mm-hmm. But I don't know. I just threw that word down because it's a good word. I'm not intending to go over to start using it though, unless we're playing chess.
Yeah, probably chess would be the best. Neil, I mean, I've always been in the Baptist kind of world or the non-denominational, there's no extra local church levels of authority. So we've never had
Presbytery, Charlie?
No Presbytery. We've not had bishops. But we've always, and I've had fellowship with other guys like that, pastors of the same ilk.
Yeah.
But oftentimes, somebody will rise up who, we will sometimes refer to as the bishop, tongue in cheek.
Yes.
Because that person takes on themselves the authority.
Step lightly around the bishop.
The bishop. Yes. Yeah. those people emerge, right?
That's right. That's exactly right. Well, it's an interesting word to me. It has certain usually negative connotations for us. But how about the word bummer? Do you ever use that word?
No, I think that predated me. Yeah, I was in the 80s, 90s slang.
So if you ram your truck into a fire hydrant, the word bummer just wouldn't pop out of your head?
Now, this podcast, you mark them explicit, right? With the little, so I would say that sucks. Sucks was the term of choice when I was in formative years.
That really sucks.
That sucks, yeah.
Yeah, okay. But you wouldn't hit the fire hydrant and go, oh man, bummer.
Bummer, no.
You wouldn't use that word.
No, and I would look at you and I would be like, okay, granddad, bummer.
Bummer, dude.
That's a bummer.
but the word comes from an acid trip, of course, that went bad.
Really?
A bum trip is, so this is 66,
I didn't know that.
Let's say 66, 65, 66. Bum trip means using LSD, an acid, and it didn't work out so good. It was bad hallucinations. The guy, you used the word freak out. That's another interesting 60s word too. Might even be 50s. But Bummer is a bum trip, is where that word comes from. And that word is so hard written in my, you know, just on my hard drive.
Yeah.
I'll never stop saying bummer. I don't know how sanctified I can possibly get, but I hope more than I thus far have become. But I don't think the word bummer is ever going to disappear. Illustrating, Charlie, that a word that we grow up with, it just gets, just becomes part of who we are.
Yeah.
And I've got a lot of 60s words like that.
Yeah.
I would use the word bummer with people, always in reference to something bad.
Yeah.
Never, you know, never in reference to something good. Whereas freak out can sometimes have a good, a good connotation to it.
Yeah.
Oh man, I went to the concert. I completely freaked out, you know, because it was, he was so awesome, you know. Yeah. And
the lovely one freaked out when I gave her that card.
She freaked out when I said some transubstantiation.
Yeah, you know? She, the transubstantiation card. Yeah.
But
well, that's interesting.
Yeah.
So there are. You know, on some level, we talk about a word like gay, and there is obviously a sea change. There's a huge, you know, and a widely accepted transformation in meaning. But language is also very specific to the individual. You know, you have a vocabulary. I mean, we're living in the same part of the country, even though we have different, generationally, we have different experiences. We're, you know, we're going to have a unique vocabulary for each of us. And on some level, I've noticed in the church, I mean, evangelicalism is its own subculture, but even in local churches, people's vocabulary changes and language changes. You know, it's a little microcosm, I guess. I have always, I don't know where I picked it up, but I've always used the word brother. Oh, I've overused it in the church, you know, refer to men in the church as, you know, hey, brother, good to see you. Yeah. I'll text message.
There's an affection there. Yeah. There's an identification that we're in the same spiritual family.
Yeah. So that there's real meaning there,
yeah.
But it's become just kind of worked into my DNA and the way I communicate. But I've noticed like people come into the church and they will start to adopt the vocabulary,
the lingo
of this congregation. And a guy, you know, suddenly we all start sounding like Hulk Hogan, you know, or, hey, brother, you know, when we see each other. And it kind of perpetuates itself that way. Nobody's deliberately doing it.
No. And it's not on the church brochure.
No, we call each other brother, deliberately brother.
There should be. That's another brochure. The accepted lingo within,
the lingo.
Within our fellowship.
Yeah.
Transubstantiation is not on
that. No, we don't need that one.
So, by the way, and I thought of these three words, which I call salvific words.
Which is, salvific is itself a great word.
It is a very funky and cool salvific word, which you never use, right?
No.
I mean, pastors between themselves, maybe an elder or two might be worked into the guild.
Salvific.
There salvific. It's a cool word. It's an old word,
yeah.
But these are three words that we use so much, and I feel for, this ought to be on the brochure, or on the second brochure for new Christians, these three words, because they are very important words. They really work together nicely, and they are the three words, justification, sanctification, glorification. And this is what we would use to we've drawn out from the Bible, the book of words. The book of holy words.
Yeah.
We've drawn out from it these concepts, these ideas. We would call them truths. The justification is to be declared righteous by God in an act of sovereign grace. Right. Yes?
Yeah.
Sanctification is the outworking over that from the point of conversion to the day you die. Or the day the rapture happens. Sorry.
What now?
Well, no, I didn't say that.
What did you?
until you're in the presence of the Lord.
Yeah, the trumpet. Go on.
Right. And then glorification is the final act of becoming like Christ in the presence of Christ. However, whether that's done in when you die and your spirit is with the Lord, or when the Lord comes back, it's the final act of salvation.
Yeah.
These are great words, are they not?
They're fantastic words.
You don't apologize for using them, do you?
I don't apologize for them, but I define them always.
Yes.
Like yesterday, I mentioned justification.
That was your second point.
That was the second point in the sermon, and I defined it.
Yes.
And I would On one level, rhetorically, it'd be easier if we just all knew what the word was, because you know what I'm referring to.
You think 150 years from now... I'm sorry.
Go on.
I mean, like, they'll do brain surgery and we automatically have a doubled vocabulary.
Oh, you mean like download? Like
yes.
In the Matrix?
Yes, exactly.
Yeah.
And we all know what stuff means.
I hope not. Okay. But that...
You'd rather us have to learn these words.
Yeah. I worry. No, this is an excursion. We could go down this road, but I worry about those sci-fi scenarios, cyberpunk, I worry about like losing my mind. You know, when you start tampering with the brain.
With the brain, yeah.
Yeah, no, that's a fear. I always am afraid of losing my mind anyway. Oh. But then you start tampering with like, you know, circuitry. Oh my gosh, stay away from me.
Well, it's an interesting subject, you know. And yeah. But just to keep on the track for the end yeah. of the podcast.
Bring it back,
These three words are examples of what we would decide are very important words, chock full of meaning.
Yeah.
Really wonderful meaning. And that most people don't know and don't, the general population, yeah. I mean, you go over to the mall over here and do a poll. So, Mr. John Q. Public, would you answer this question? Do you know the difference between justification, sanctification, glorification? Nobody's going to yeah. answer yes. They don't right. know what these words are. Unless they're churchified Christians.
Right.
Then maybe they'll know what yeah. they are. But they're really great words, and they're important mm-hmm. words that we use in our own community quite easily. I mean, so the Joe Baptist, average Baptist church down in Floyd, mm-hmm. are they going to know what these words are?
Maybe. they're shorthand for a big concept.
Yes.
And they help us to communicate. I would love it. Well, you walk a line in communicating, like in a sermon or something like that, because you have a very wide variety of listeners.
Yes.
If I'm speaking at an elders meeting, I can fire off some words like this, and those guys are right with me.
They're right.
You know, and I can say so much more in such a short amount of time. But if I'm speaking to a large group of people, somebody may have just rolled up in the church parking lot by accident and showed up at our outside meeting because that's where they normally smoke pot, and now we're having a service there, right? And they have no idea, so that I've got to slow down the communication. Which has pros and cons there.
Yeah, because we have a limited amount of time to... Here we are doing a whole podcast on this very subject, but this is yeah. where we live, and we right. don't have much time to... if I'm doing a Bible study and we're going through the scripture, a passage of the Word of God,
yeah,
and there's seven words in there that really deserve to be defined and carefully handled, but I don't have time to
yeah.
do that.
Yeah.
You know, because first of all, everybody will leave the Bible study if yep. it gets too boring, too pedantic, you know, mm-hmm. too just academic with vocabulary.
Nice use of pedantic, by the way. Yeah. Speaking of words.
Another cool yeah. word is pedagogy, yep. by the way.
Oh, yes.
Yeah,
all like the gogies. Those yes. are all good.
the class of cool words. Yeah.
I'll tell you a cool word. Speaking of this, like the shorthand mm-hmm. idea, like. Yes. We use a word at our house it's an archaic word, growlery. Have you heard growlery?
No.
No, so it's not in the dictionary anymore. It was one that was like excised in the, you know, early in the century. But it's a place that a melancholy person goes to lament alone.
Growlery.
Growlery.
Interesting.
Right. And we have two children that often seek solace away alone somewhere, hidden in the garage or hidden in the woods or, you know, where that tree stump they sit on, because they're in a foul mood and they need to go be alone for a little while. And so we use the term growlery. You know, my wife will say, "Where is so-and-so?" And I'll say, "Oh, he's in the growlery."
Okay.
Right. And what I mean is,
your wife knows exactly what
yep,
you're talking about.
He slunk off somewhere.
Yeah. Yeah.
To lick his wounds, yeah, and he'll be yeah. back later.
That's interesting. I've never heard that word
yeah,
before.
Yeah, yeah, but it's sometimes, you know, in the context, in the specific circumstances, we can communicate a whole lot with just a few syllables.
Yeah, everybody yeah. knows, or the people you're talking to yeah. know exactly what you mean.
But if anybody yeah. else in the city of Roanoke came in our house and I said he's in the growlery, they're what on earth is the growlery,
right? That's interesting. That's wonderful.
I like that. I like that word a lot.
Yeah, that's a good word. I might start using that. Yeah. Well, Renee, I'm going to be receding into the growlery realm. Well, I can't even say it. Growlery now because I'm annoyed. And
Yep.
Yeah. Well, this could go on for 4 or 8 more hours, I think.
Probably so,
Charlie. Yeah. But the words are, just to conclude here, I mean, we're illustrating a thing that needs to be said in public. Words are important. They communicate. Sticks and stones will break my bones, but words may never hurt me. Yes, they will.
Yeah. Worse than the sticks and the stones in the end.
Yeah, I'd almost rather get some sticks and stones than some of the words that have been said to me. Yeah. And probably I have been motivated to use at other people.
Well, so not just Christian martyrs, but I'm thinking specifically of Christian martyrs. Many have chosen, break my bones with sticks and stones, but I will not utter those words you want me to say.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah. So words are how we communicate and the means by which we use to communicate ideas, the vehicle of words is really an important subject. And I wouldn't even say we're even successfully scratching the surface. We're just bumping up against the surface for a few minutes here today. Well, this has been Coffee Break, my podcast. I'm Neil Damgard. I've had Charlie Evans with me delightfully. He's a lovely gentleman, by the way, folks.
That was what a lovely thing to say.
Yes. We'll both be receding into the ground right now. We hope you'll join us again on our next Coffee Break podcast.